Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to the 10th episode of Catch Up with Louise McSharry. Can you believe it? 10 episodes. It's weird because 10 feels like not that many. And yet at the same time, it feels like I've been doing this for so long. And once again, I feel compelled to say thank you so much for helping me make it to 10 episodes and for being a part of this podcast by listening to it every week and supporting it. And thank you to everyone who takes the time to send me lovely messages and come and say hi to me when you see me out and about. It really means an awful lot to me and it's making my life just so happy. Hope you had a good week. If you didn't, let's just put that behind us. I actually had a great one. I was all over the place. I was busy this week. I was in Cork for a couple of days, and you know, after not having been in Cork for ages, I was in Cork twice in the last few weeks, and I'm sorry, Dubs, but Cork people are great. They are, like, they really are just lovely, lovely people. And this time I was down there to have a meeting and a chat with some of the people in Hayfield Manor, which is a gorgeous hotel there. And also Peggy and Crowley, who's the founder of this wellness brand called Ground, which was gorgeous. But anyway, I got to stay in the hotel and have a treatment. I had a 90-minute bespoke massage. And can I just say, if you have not ever had a massage slash you haven't had one in a long time, I could not encourage you more to book one this week. If you can pull the money together, it is just such a glorious and, you know, truly self-caring experience. And I think, you know, that especially goes for people who are single, maybe people who live alone, people who don't get the benefit of human touch very often, because we actually really need that as human beings. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for paying a stranger to touch you. That's all I'm saying. I just, you know, there is. But yeah, Hayfield Manor, amazing. Such a lovely hotel. It's like really old school, very glamorous. I loved being there. The staff were amazing. It was just like a 10 out of 10 for me. And then I stayed in Cork again the second night because I was doing a live podcast recording with Blind Boy for his podcast, which was just brilliant. Like obviously Blind Boy is like the godfather of Irish podcasting. He's such a huge success. He is such a lovely guy. So kind, so supportive, so encouraging. And I really enjoyed my chat with him. And I think that's going to be out, I don't know, sometime in the next few weeks, maybe. So keep an eye on his podcast releases if you want to hear that, if you're not just absolutely sick of me. But anyway, that's enough rubbishing on. It is time now to get on with things. We've got a lot to talk about this week. Later on in the episode, we're going to be talking to Louise O'Neill, author of her number one best-selling Idol. Going to be talking about that book and how she's getting on and, you know, what inspired her to write about influencers and wellness and how well you can trust your memory and all these kind of interesting topics. And then later on, Esther O'Moore Dunhue is going to bring us all the entertainment stories of the week, but we will start with the news. Aoife Moore, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. Thank you so much for joining me
once again.
Good afternoon. Yeah, we're recording in an afternoon.
I don't know.
Madness.
Ladies of leisure.
I wish. So let's start with the National Maternity Hospital, as we have for the last couple of weeks, because the deal is done and kind of...
The deal is done. The government part of the deal is done. It was signed off by Cabinet on Tuesday and there was an ensuing row that accumulated into a vote last night, Wednesday night, in the Dáil. There was a Sinn Féin motion that the National Maternity Hospital would have to be publicly owned on public land. And somewhat dramatically, two Green Party TDs, Nessa Hourigan and Patrick Costello, voted with the opposition. So the government abstained, and the two Green TDs voted with the opposition that it should be publicly owned on public land. Now, both Green TDs have said they know, obviously, they're whipped in government parties and that they're supposed to be voting for the government, but they felt in all good conscience that they couldn't vote against this motion. They've both been sanctioned now for 6 months, which means that they lose, you know, like speaking rights in the chamber. This is actually the second time this has happened to Nessa Hourigan. She abstained on a vote last year on a vote about housing. She is kind of seen as like the rebel Green TD. She was against going into government, and I think she has been somewhat of the problem child for Eamon Ryan. But she, very principled, you know, and just said that she couldn't in all conscience vote against it. So the government now was down to 80 TDs. So that's a bare majority that they have now. So there was some worry that they might expel the two TDs, but the government basically can't risk losing them now. So nothing really happens.
And if they expelled them, what would that mean?
They would no longer be Green.
Okay, just anymore. So from the party.
Yeah, they would just be independent, or they could join a different party. Okay. But they're not going to do that because the government needs the numbers. The motion itself isn't binding. It doesn't force the government to do anything. It was more of a principled thing. Yeah. And I think it is kind of like the bookend of this chapter now of this was always going to be something that was going to tear the government apart. Mm. They will be fine. This is not going to end the government. There's not going to be an election or anything like that. But I think it was probably the most fitting way for this kind of argument to end. The hospital is still a while away from being built. You know, this is going to rumble on for a while, but the government are secure. They say that they have legally binding language that there will be no religious ethos, no control, and it'll be a state hospital and everything but name. They keep saying essentially ownership, but it's a 299-year lease that we're paying for a new maternity hospital at St. Vincent's.
I feel like we could talk about it at length, but there's actually just no point at this stage. Like, it's done.
It's done now.
And all we can do is move and take our principles with us, I suppose. Okay, let's move to Ukraine. What is the latest there? There's a real, I think, dip in kind of people's ability to pay attention to what's happening there at this point, because it has been going on for so long.
Yeah, I think.
But it is still going on.
I think we're 12 weeks. Yeah. 12 weeks in. So there's been ups and downs. Russia has been pushed back out of a lot of regions. And something I think we're going to see a lot more of this week was the first week that we saw a Russian soldier being tried in Kyiv for war crimes. So I don't know if anyone's seen pictures of him. He looks so young.
Yeah.
There's no age on him, but he looks about, to me, he looks about 18 or 19. He's pled guilty to shooting a 62-year-old man 4 days into the Russian invasion. He's from the Siberia region, and he's been charged with war crimes and premeditated murder, and faces a possible life sentence. The Ukrainians say that they've been in touch with the wee boy's mother, but they have not had any contact with Russia. It does kind of seem that Russia have kind of
washed their hands.
Left this wee boy to it. They said that their ability to provide assistance is due to their lack of diplomatic mission in Ukraine.
Oh my God.
Like, I'd say the current mission that you are on is probably the reason.
Like, honest to God.
So, also this week, Ukraine won the Eurovision Song Contest.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I had Spain pipped at the post by the Ukrainians. They are determined. They said that they would host it next year in Kyiv. You know, I think it was a big show of solidarity to show that Europe very much is behind
Ukraine. Oh, 100%. Because, like, the jury vote obviously wasn't for them. But I think people wanted to send the message that they have the support of Europe. And there is something beautiful in that, I think.
And if the Irish entry, if Derry Lipa can't win, then Ukraine.
It's got to be the Ukraine. Or it's got to be Ukraine, excuse me. I did see that there was something interesting that happened with a Russian gymnast this week.
Yeah, so this new symbol of a Z has become, like, a pro-war symbol. It's been painted on, like, Russian tanks and all that sort of stuff. And it's been kind of this symbol now of, like, supportive of Russia. There was a Russian gymnast who was wearing a vest, and it had the Z kind of prominently placed. And he was standing next to another Ukrainian gymnast when he was wearing it. So he was banned for a year because this is obviously seen as, you know, trying to instigate something.
And you're not supposed to be political, I think. Yeah,
yeah, you're not supposed to wear anything. So, yeah, the Russian Defense Ministry hasn't commented. They aren't, it's not something that Russia is officially backing the Z symbol, but they haven't played it down. Yeah. It's painted on like tanks and soldiers. You would see soldiers with it on their, you know, flak jackets and stuff. But it's, it stands for the Russian term for West begins with Z. And obviously Ukraine is west of Russia. So that's where it came from.
Right. And Zelensky appeared at the Cannes Film Festival.
Yeah, it was all very dramatic. So President Zelensky opened the Cannes Film Festival via Zoom and he recited that speech from the dictator. You should go on, people should go on and watch it. Like, it is, it was quite dramatic at the time. But Cannes this year is apparently, there's going to be a heavy kind of Ukraine influence, like films made by Ukrainian filmmakers are going to take precedence. Russians with links to the government have been banned. I don't know why they're deciding how you have a link.
Yeah.
Like, what if, like, anyway, so it's mad actually how, like, it has permeated everything.
Yeah. You know, like, that's what arts, I was going to say. Yeah.
Everything is, it's so dominant now.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like the rest of the world is really, for the most part, the vast majority of the rest of the world is just completely united in their position on this.
But I just don't know where this ends.
I know, me neither. Next up, there was a report this week about women experiencing addiction and domestic violence.
Yeah, this is really, really depressing to read. But I also wasn't that surprised. Yeah. You know what I mean? God, it's not so depressing. So at least 11,000 women struggling with addiction are also victims of domestic violence. And around 50,000 women have endured both things simultaneously at some point in their lives. So that's people struggling with addiction and are victims of domestic violence. It was published by this group called Divina, and it's part of a woman-only addiction support service in the North Inner City, and they do great work. But it's a lot to do with childhood traumas, and then obviously once you're in the throes of addiction, you're just a lot more vulnerable.
You're so vulnerable, yeah.
And there's a lot of, you know, shame and stigma about both addiction and domestic violence. And a lot of it is when you're in the throes of addiction and a lot of them have children, they are then afraid to leave as well because they don't feel like they can look after the children themselves. It's just all really depressing. I cannot underline enough how much we are not, as a country, we are signed up to the Istanbul Convention on, you know, the treatment of women, and we don't have enough domestic violence refuges. And I also believe that we could put a domestic violence refuge on every street in the country, but if we are not educating young men about their emotions and how to deal with anger, then it's not going to make any difference.
And we're also not dealing with addiction effectively in this country at all. Like, I mean, it's so difficult to access treatment.
We still don't have a safe injection centre in Dublin City Centre.
So much of kind of, you know, addictive behaviour is just criminalised. So people end up in jail or, you know, in dangerous situations that they shouldn't be in. And then they seek protection. Like, look, I'm coming at this from the position of someone, like, you know, I've talked about it 100,000 times, that my mom was an alcoholic, my biological mom, and she was beaten really badly by a boyfriend and ended up in a wheelchair for the rest of her life. Like, in a situation like that, she was living on the street. She needed someone to be with her and protect her. And that's how it ended up. And she was in several abusive relationships.
So because when it becomes like a vicious circle then.
Yeah, exactly. You need protection, but if your protector is you also need to be protected from your protector.
And there is now, obviously, Helle McEntee, the Justice Minister, has done really good work on this, and there is a domestic violence strategy coming, but it's a long time coming. We should have had it before, and there are still 11 counties without refuges. And no, more funding has been made available to get refugees into them counties, but I just can't believe we're even in a situation where we're having that conversation.
Yeah, I know. On to something different and more positive stories. We, Aoife, are going to talk about sport.
We are modern women talking about sport.
No one is as shocked as we are.
I love this story so much. So Jake Daniels, little 17-year-old cherub has made history as the UK's only openly gay active male professional footballer. He plays for Blackpool. He announced it this week. It's his childhood club. He said that, you know, he's all his dreams have come true. He always wanted to play for Blackpool and he felt comfortable enough to say that he is a gay man and he's very happy and he's had loads of support. He did a video interview with Sky News. It was really well done. He was talking about how, you know, he felt very supported by his teammates and his family. And he had done, I think was very common, especially fellas who play football, had done the thing of like, no, I'm straight. And he went out with girls and tried to convince himself for a long time because that's what footballers do. Footballers go out with girls. And he said that he knew, that he was gay and he felt comfortable to come out. The last person who was openly gay was Justin Fashanu, and that was in 1990. So that was before I was born.
Like, it's wild, isn't it? I saw Daniel Lambert, who works with Bo's Bohemians Football Club, who I adore. Even though I'm not into sport, I always say I'm not into football, but I'm into Bo's.
This is Louise and he found off the ball.
Yeah. But I saw him on The Tonight Show and he was saying, like, you know, there are two, I think, out professional football players in the world right now. One in Australia.
Yeah.
And he was like, we all know that statistically, it's not possible.
Oh, there's loads of them.
And it really is, as he said, an indictment of the culture of football that more people don't feel comfortable to
like
come out.
My cousin was a professional footballer, a very successful professional footballer. And he...
Okay, all right. Pipe down.
We would openly talk about how, like, he has played football with a lot of men who were gay, but he was like, and the teammates know and stuff. But, like, they're just not talking about it publicly because of the fans and football culture. And I would also say that that really lovely interview that Sky News did, he had to turn the comments off.
Well, exactly. And he had to turn his comments off on Instagram. And so there's just a lot of work, I think, that needs to be done within football to try and improve that culture. Like, even my kids, we live near Bo's and my kids are really into Bo's. Here I go. And they love seeing Bo's stickers and sticking up Bo's stickers. And so they watch them all the time. And there's like gay Bo's stickers that have rainbows in the, within the Bo's crest. And frequently, as we're walking through Phibsborough, I see that someone has come along and just scribbled out the rainbow. Left the sticker. Like, obviously, opposition fans had ripped down the stickers. But there's someone who's got, at least one person who's going around scribbling out the rainbow. And that goes against the whole ethos of Bo's specifically. But it's also just so pathetic.
As someone who is deeply, deeply troubled about their own sexuality.
It has to be, right? Like, why else would you care?
I have so much going on. What other people get up to in their spare time is really none of my concern. I am a busy person. I'm too busy for homophobia.
I couldn't agree more. And to end on another good note, and I'm delighted to be able to do that this week, Razadat Adeleke, Irish runner,
is now the fastest Irish woman of all time from over 60 metres, 200 metres, 300 metres and 400 metres.
She just keeps breaking records.
Go on. She's 19.
She's amazing.
She's absolutely amazing. She is a University of Texas student. I think she's originally from Tala. And she is basically on the rise. The US college scene, obviously, is where they do all the athletics. And she is set now, big summer for, she is going to the World Championships in Oregon, European Championships in August, NCAA Championships. Like, this woman just running her heart out.
It's very exciting, isn't it?
It's amazing. And she's so, like, when you see her getting interviewed, she's so sweet. Like, she can't believe it that she's like, can't believe she's so fast.
I mean, some people just have it.
It's such a good time for Irish women sport, isn't it?
It really is. It really is.
Yeah. Woman, big fan.
Aoife Moore, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Idol is Louise O'Neill's sixth book. She's written three young adult novels and this is her third adult novel. It is, I think, my favourite of her books so far. It is set in the world of a super glamorous influencer, as Louise will explain, and it is just right in my wheelhouse. It deals with matters of consent. It deals with the internet. It deals with fakeness on the internet, all the kinds of things that I think we all think about and talk about all the time these days. And I was delighted excited to have a chance to sit down and chat to her about it. Louise O'Neill, it is such a pleasure to be with you again and to discuss a new book. I gather it's 10 years since you started writing fiction.
It is. I turned 37 in February, and on my 27th birthday, my parents bought me a laptop. I remember opening the present and my mother saying, "Oh, it's for you to write your novel." And I was like, they really do expect me to write this. And about 2 weeks later, I started writing Only Ever Yours. So I think that was probably the best birthday present that I've ever received.
And did you think at that point, you know, when you did start writing, were you like, "Oh, this probably isn't going to go anywhere"? Or did you feel confident about your abilities?
I think any writer, particularly maybe with a first draft, goes through phases of, "This is genius." And then, "This is the worst thing that's ever been written." So there was a little bit of that. Now, I will say, I felt very, like, the voice of that character, Frida, in Only Ever Yours came through, like, you know, that was very strong in the beginning. And I remember writing the first chapter and looking at it and going, "Oh, I think this might be okay." But then, as you know, like, as I said, over 6 months, there was definitely times where I thought, "What am I doing? What am I doing with my life?"
Every writer friend I have, I have to coach them through that phase of like, "This is terrible. I'm giving them the money back. I'm not writing this book." You know,
I think I know what friend you're talking about. And I get it.
Well, it's not just one person. This is the thing. It's several people. Like, every fiction writer I know has those moments. Maybe not that extreme, but it's you know, it's interesting to hear that it was kind of like that for you from the very beginning. Yeah. So this book is called Idol. I loved it. I think it's my favorite book of yours ever. Now, it is right up my street. The kind of themes and content are like made for me, basically. I won't attempt to describe it because I think you'll do a better job of it.
Well, I've sort of practiced my elevator pitch.
Okay,
so I'm going to give it to you here now. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So Idol is about Samantha Miller, who is this American wellness guru. And she's very beautiful and, you know, a macrobiotic diet and is very successful and has millions of followers on social media, incredibly wealthy, very glam, you know. She has just written this book called Chaste. And in order to promote it, she writes an essay about a sexual experience that she had as a teenager with her then best friend, Lisa. And the essay goes viral. But then Lisa gets in contact to say that that's not quite how she remembers it. That her memory of what happened that night is much darker. So, like, while the book, you know, I suppose, is about influencers and wellness and sort of hashtag girl boss feminism, I think it's also about power and sex and consent and celebrity, you know, all of that kind of juicy stuff.
Yeah, which is why, as I said, it was right up my alley. And what made you decide to write about this particular kind of situation or this topic?
Like, I actually think I've been thinking about this for a while. Like, I remember reading Lena Dunham's collection of essays when that came out. I can't remember if that was 2012 or 2014. But in it, she talked about this experience when she was 7 and her sibling was 1, where she spread open her sibling's vagina. And, like, the reaction to it online was so incredibly divisive. You know, like, 50% of people were like, "This is child abuse and she should be prosecuted." And 50% of people were like, "No, this is just kids being kids and exploring each other's bodies." And I was really struck by that, like, the idea that, I suppose, that the exact same words on a page or the exact same event could be interpreted in such, like, wildly different ways. I don't know, I suppose, like, you know, after Trump and post-truth and alternative facts and, you know, all of that, I think that kind of idea of, like, my truth, you know, I think we've all heard that, "Well, this is my truth." And it's like, well, if it's not the truth, then what's the point of it, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting thing that is explored really well in the book, that, like, you know, how much can you even trust your own memories?
Yeah.
Like, your memories can be influenced by so many different things that what you perceived to be the exact events as they happened is never going to be identical to the way that someone else who was there sees them.
I'm not sure if you've had that experience with, like, siblings or people that you were friends with when you were kids and you're trying to remember something that happened and it's really fuzzy and like, it actually happened to me recently, and I used it for the book, where that I was talking to my mother about my first memory. And I said, "I remember you putting this dress on me, and you know, we were in my room above the shop." And my mom said, but Louise, we moved from the shop when you were 3 months. We were living in Inchdani on your third birthday. And I knew that. Like, you know, yeah. It's not that I didn't know that, but it was so odd that, like, for all those years when I was talking about my first memory, that I kind of didn't put it together, that didn't line up.
That it wasn't possible. Yeah,
that it was impossible. And I suppose with Sam, I suppose her memories are so integral to who she is as a person, mm-hmm. which I think is true of all of us. You know, our memories, our stories kind of inform who we are.
Mm.
And for Sam, so much of, I think, how she looks at herself is this idea of, I am a good person. Yeah. I am doing good in the world. My work is important. I'm helping my girls. I'm helping them recover. I'm helping them heal. And I think when Lisa comes along and sort of threatens to undermine those memories and those stories and the way in which she sees herself, like, it feels incredibly destabilizing.
Yeah.
And she will go to rather extreme lengths, yes. I think, to sort of protect her memories.
Well, I think that's really interesting as well, because obviously she is, you know, she is an influencer, and the opening scenes of the book are, she's at this massive launch event for her new book, and immediately you see the kind of conflict between what she has, her like personal narrative, like what she thinks she is and what she's doing, and the truth. Mm-hmm. You know, she really believes that she is this, you know, positive force, that, you know, she really cares about her girls, as she calls them, you know, the people who follow her and admire her.
Yeah.
But you can immediately see, based on her behavior, that, like, maybe that's not so true.
Not so true, yeah. And, like, I think, you know, I'm probably coming to this, all of it, like influencers and wellness and new age spirituality, I'm not coming to this from, like, a cynical place or a skeptical place, like, particularly with new age spirituality, which has actually been a really important part of my life since I was a child and sort of, or since I was a teenager and rejected Catholicism. Like, that really took that place, you know. And so I think coming to that and, like, looking at a lot of the gurus in this space, a lot of who are, you know, like, these very white, powerful, blonde, you know, very thin women. And, like, I suppose maybe seeing how few of them, I think, are able to sort of interrogate their own sense of, or their own privilege, really. And yeah, I think maybe I was in a prime position to go, God, this would be really interesting to kind of write about a character like this. But I often feel like, you know, and I'm not just saying this because I know this is kind of part of your job as well, but, like, I do think being an influencer looks like an incredibly difficult job.
Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't be for me. Like, I have to say that, you know.
Something that I fell into, like, I didn't set out to kind of do that kind of work. It is really hard. Mm. And it's getting harder all the time.
Mm.
Because people's expectations are growing all the time.
Yeah.
And I mean that from the perspective of, you know, some people feel entitled to you and your time and your kind of, you know, to information or whatever. You know, I have to say I have a gorgeous following. Like, the people who follow me are so supportive and kind, but every once in a while there's one that rears their ugly head and they feel they can, you know, criticize you and judge you and, you know, lay all of that at your doorstep without any regard for the fact that you're a human being. And aside from that, the actual work side of it, you know, agencies and clients and the expectations there are growing all the time, you know, if you're doing sponsored content or whatever. So honestly, and I'm very lucky, because I was just saying this to someone last night, that, like, when things finished for me in RTE, if I didn't have that kind of work in my life, I would have been really screwed. I mean, my work finished so abruptly. Mm-hmm. Financially, I would have been in big trouble. Yeah. I have two kids, you know, and that saved me, that I had that extra work. But it is very difficult.
Yeah. No, and I do. And I think that, like, I suppose to always try, and I suppose with Samantha, like, to bring it back to that, like, you can kind of see it with that she has to mine her own life for content. She has to, and she's found a way, I suppose, to monetize, like, her trauma and her childhood. And but, like, when you're letting people in to like the extent that she is, as you said, like,
you pay a price.
Yeah, that there are those expectations, and when her girls feel like she has let them down, like when these allegations of abuse go public, like, they're so furious with her. And I think that kind of parasocial relationship as well is, like, I don't know, I do find that sort of endlessly fascinating.
It is. I mean, it is. And I'm in a lot of those relationships, and I'm in them with other influencers as well. You know, there are plenty of people who I watch, and, I like, sometimes people will come up to me and they'd say, oh, sorry, like, you must get this all the time. Or, like, I'm sorry to say hi, or, like, this is weird because I know so much about you. And I'm always like, I have this exact experience with other people. So, like, don't worry, you know, because we all, you know, if you're online at all, like, we all have those, those parasocial relationships, as you say, but they are evolving and changing, and some are great and some are not so great, and it is endlessly fascinating. So that's why I was so delighted to read about it in your book. Another thing that I really enjoyed reading about, because it's something that I've given a lot of thought to, is, you know, at the center of the book is this friendship between Lisa and Sam. And, you know, they were friends from when they were four, you know, until things turned for them when they came into adulthood. And I, that intensity of their friendship, I feel like we don't read enough about those relationships that girls have with each other in childhood and in the teen years. Yeah. Like, I have hurt from teenage friendships that I carry. I'm turning 40 this year. Yeah. And I have just accepted, like, it will never go.
Yeah.
Because those friendships are like, you know, relationships, like, you know, intimate relationships. So how did it feel to write about that? Is that something that you experienced yourself?
Oh my God, yes. And funny, in a way, it sort of feels like a sister novel to Only Ever Yours, which was my first novel. And there was sort of that very obsessive, like enmeshed, like kind of codependent. Like,
yeah.
You know, with Sam and Lisa, like the tragedy is that in a way they are the loves of each other's lives. And even though they both see themselves as the victim of the other person's behavior, that they both kind of think that they're, you know, the other one has hurt them in a way that they'll never recover from. Like, they just, I suppose, are still want to be in each other's lives, even though it's so destructive for both of them. And like, when I think of, like, I had a friendship breakup when I was like 17. Mm. And, you know, honestly, I don't think I've ever been as heartbroken.
No.
Like, you know, it was definitely, I think, one of the most devastating experiences of my entire life.
Yeah, I'm the same.
And I agree with you about the hurt. I remember recently bumping into someone that I hadn't seen since school. And we'd had kind of a contentious relationship in school, and I felt so small. Like, I instantly felt 16, and I felt so nervous. And I walked away and I was like, I'm 37. You know, I have a good career.
Yeah.
I've made something of my life. You know, I have an incredible partner. You know, I've loads of friends. Like, I don't need to be, but it was amazing how quickly, and I mean, I have done so much therapy, Louise. You know what I mean? I have done so much therapy. But it was so interesting to see how quickly I kind of just like regressed into like that really anxious, kind of nervous, like not good enough, just feeling like I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
You know?
I relate to that so much.
Yeah.
I know that feeling. And you're like, why am I, what is this about? Like, why do I carry this in me?
Yeah.
But I think you have to just accept it.
Yeah, and I suppose so as you said, there's kind of flashbacks in the book that's sort of between 1998 and 2000 when they're teenagers.
Mm.
But I also think...
Which also perfect for me, because that's when I was a teenager, so...
And the music and everything. I had so much fun with it. And the clothes and like having to watch like teen movies from that era just to kind of get back into
the... All the cultural references, very enjoyable.
But I do think that, like, you know, particularly as an adult, like as an adolescent, because so much of what you're experiencing is like for the first time. And like, often we don't remember like our first from, let's say, when we were a toddler, when we're learning to speak or when we're learning to walk. But like, you always remember like the first time you had sex, the first time you fell in love, the first time you like drove a car.
Yeah, whether you want to or not.
Yeah. Or the first, you know, so I think it all feels very fresh, and it's like, I don't know, it just sort of like lays down tracks in you in some way, and it's really hard, I think, to get those back up.
Yeah. So this book is a thriller, even though I actually didn't realize that until I finished it.
Yeah. I didn't realize it until it came out and everyone kept calling it a thriller. I was like, is it okay?
Well, I don't know how you define thriller, but it's, but I felt like at the end I was like, oh no, that's a thriller, because it has great pace, and it's very kind of, you know, you really, all through the book, you kind of don't know what is the truth.
That's because, true. And you're trying to find out, I suppose, what the truth is. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're chasing the truth, which makes it a really great read, because you're just dying to get there. Is this kind of the track that you think you'll stay on, this kind of...
I don't know. I mean, I'm so, you know, I'm so contrary, Louise. Like, you know, like, I'm just like, what genre will I do now? I suppose when I, after The Silence, which was my last book, which was my first, I suppose, psychological thriller, like, I did really enjoy, like, that sense of pace and, like, kind of trying to keep that, you know, like, to make it a real page turner and, like, really compelling. And like, a lot of that is in, I know even with the first draft, my editor said, okay, we need to cut, like, 40,000 words. I worked really hard on
my precious words.
But I think there was something about that I really enjoyed the challenge of. But I, I suppose I can never say, because I've written in so many genres, I get bored really easily. And often, I suppose it's more about the story itself and how I want the story to be told. Like I was talking to my editor yesterday and I said I really wanted to write like an adult version of Now and Then. Did you watch Now and Then?
Yes.
Thank you, because neither of them had seen it. And I was trying to explain to them. And you see, it's not on streaming.
Yeah.
So it's really tricky. But I was
actually
like,
just rewatched it like last year.
Does it hold up? Tell me.
Well, I think, you know, a movie that you love as a teenage girl, or like you're always going to love. Yes. I can't look at it, you know, objectively.
And I think it's so rare because like I know at the time it was critically slammed. But like when is particularly in the 90s, like, you know, coming of age story about girls not kind of being slammed as, you know, fluffy and superficial. But I love that film.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you something now. It's a two pronged. I was about to say two fingered. That's not an expression.
Jesus, thanks for preparing me.
It's a two-pronged question. First, you know, I know you made the decision to kind of take a step back from Twitter some time ago, and that's still the case.
Yeah.
And you're on Instagram a little bit, but you know, you're quite private, I think.
Yeah, I think you see, you're so good on Instagram. Like, I love watching your stories because you're so like you're such a clear speaker, and like you're always so articulate. Whereas I'm always like, feel like I'm like turning into like a children's TV presenter. Hi guys.
Well, I find I'm on Instagram less and less as well. Like, I think we go through phases, and it depends on how you're feeling and how safe you're feeling, I think, to share. But in the second finger of that question is, like, everybody knows that you are in a relationship with Richard Chambers, who people became just obsessed with during the pandemic. And I feel like that kind of shone a little bit of a light on you. Is it strange to kind of have that be a little bit public? It's not like you're on red carpets getting photographed together, but like,
oh god. Okay, well, the first part of that question was, so Richard runs my Twitter account now, which makes it very hard for me to give out about him using Twitter, because I'm like, put your phone away. He's like, actually, I'm doing your work. So then I feel really guilty. And Instagram, I never had the same grow for Instagram, so it was kind of easier to manage that a bit. And the second part of that question, with Richard, I don't know. I mean, the pandemic was very strange in a lot of ways, and I didn't get to see him for most of it.
Yeah, that must have been so hard.
It was really hard on our relationship, and it's just been great now to be able to actually spend some actual time together.
Yeah.
And I suppose I think with Richard, he's so focused on his job, you know, and he's always just wanting to do his job really well. So I think because he's really focused on that and not necessarily on the other stuff, you know, and I think actually Gavin and Zara are the same, you know, his colleagues who kind of, I think they all kind of had a bit of a glow up. I think they're all a bit bemused by it and just want to do their job. And I think that sort of influences then how I react to it.
Right.
He's great. Though sometimes it was funny, someone came up the other day and they said, oh, I love your books. And when they left, I was like, I'm so relieved. I thought they were coming up to say that they were, because they're always coming up to talk to him now. I was like, someone from me.
That must be so strange.
You must get it as well. Like, with people knowing who you are. I mean,
yeah, but my poor husband is like, he's like, yeah, I'm Mr. Louise McSharry.
I can be Mrs. No, actually, no, I was going to say I'll be Mrs. Richard. No, it's fine when he says it, but not when I say it. No. But actually, what Richard says now is that he was out walking Cooper, our little rescue, that people have started going, hi, Cooper.
Oh.
God. Less Cooper content. This is getting strange.
Well, it's great to see you. You're obviously very happy. And
can I just say that I am absolutely loving the podcast.
Oh, thank
you. And honestly, because when you left 2FM, like, I was obviously like very, you know, disappointed for you as a person, but like on a very selfish level, I was like, damn it, I really wanted to talk to Louise about this book. So I was really trying to like DM you going, you should really start a podcast. And I'm just so happy that you have. And it's so brilliant. And I'm just delighted, to be honest.
Oh, thank you. I'm delighted too. I really am. Like, I'm happier. I'm very happy with the way things are. And, you know, I knew, you know, when things like this happen, you always know that they'll work out for the best, because everything always does, you know, or almost always. And I knew that I would feel the better for kind of what happened. But I couldn't have imagined that I would be so happy. The freedom of it is amazing. And, you know, getting to make something entirely myself just is brilliant as well.
You deserve that, Louise.
Thank you, Louise. Yeah. Louise squared. Well, Louise O'Neill, I know this book is going to be huge. I wouldn't be surprised if this book is a movie or a TV series. Oh, like,
so.
It's
Reese Witherspoon. Wouldn't she be so perfect? Her or Gwyneth Paltrow, I think.
How do you get it to her? How does that work?
I don't know. We're going to have to figure out a way. Who do I know that knows Reese Witherspoon?
I mean, I feel like you definitely know someone.
You're never far away from anyone. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, I can't wait to watch the series. Who would play Sam Miller?
I think maybe Reese. I mean, I know she's 40, so, oh God, I shouldn't say that. Reese, you're very young looking. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, but so is Sam, right?
Yes, but what age is Reese Witherspoon, though? It doesn't matter.
Oh, Sam is 40.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Reese Witherspoon's probably a little bit older, but she can play young.
Yeah, she can. Oh, my God, she looks amazing.
I want to watch that movie. I really
Reese Witherspoon, you look amazing. I know you always listen to Louise McSherry's podcast.
Huge listener. Okay, Louise, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Louise.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
I know that you love Esther O'More Donoghue as much as I do, so I'm thrilled that she's back this week to take us through the entertainment stories. Kravis got married. There was all kinds of hijinks happening around that. And we talked about Cardi B changing nappies with her long, long nails. How did she do it? Nail chat is a crucial part of this week's episode. And of course, we had to address Cara Delevingne and the way she would go on. Esther, my friend, we are once again together. It actually feels like ages since we did this.
It's a couple of weeks. You know, people have talked, but here we are now. I'm here. And guys, I'm back. You're welcome home.
Look, people adore you, Esther. So I'm sure there are loads of people who've been missing you. But we have lots to talk about. And the first thing we have to talk about is the strange behavior of Cara Delevingne at the Billboard Music Awards this week.
Look, maybe she had an extra bottle of TK Red Lemonade because she's a bit excited, happy to be in Megan Thee Stallion's company, of course.
As we all would be, Louise.
But she was chaotic.
Yeah.
She was all over the place. And I've seen it. There was a video of her, I think it was last Halloween, at Leah McSweeney, your favourites from Real Housewives of New York. Thank you. Halloween party, and Azalea Banks was performing and she was on stage with her, and it was just like, you know when you get the secondhand cringe from someone, you're like, oh my God.
Like bending, like first of all, it did not look like Azalea had invited her on stage because Azalea was not even looking at her. Like she was just like completely ignoring her. You could feel the coldness coming from the screen, and she was kind of bending over and like pretending to lick her legs, like really, like so awkward. And then as she was all like just kind of just over the top and kind of all over Megan Thee Stallion at the Billboard Awards, but And in case I in one of my WhatsApp groups, we were discussing it and we were like, but wait, was she Megan Thee Stallion's plus one? Because why was she on the red carpet with her and why was she sitting beside her?
Yeah, but it's because, I mean, look, we don't know. They probably have their own WhatsApp group together. You know, celebs are just like us. They're probably texting each other because they had their photos of them at the Met Gala. Let's say they're friends. And they must have been, because you don't accidentally sit beside someone at the front, and near the front row of the Billboard World. So they were there together as friends. And like, I don't think, I've looked at it, I've analysed the video. Megan doesn't look like she's, Megan, my close friend, doesn't look like she's too irritated. She's kind of just like ignoring her in a weird way. But Cara's still just giving it too much, and it was cringe. Anyway, so then there was a photo released of her and Doja Cat at the Billboard Awards.
This is Megan and Doja Cat.
Megan and Doja Cat. And it was from a fan account, but Megan reposted and Cara had been edited out. The brutality.
Coldness. Okay. So it was on a fan account first.
Yeah.
And then Megan shared it. So because I heard the story that Megan had cut Cara out.
I'm getting it from a fan account. We might have to Google this. But in the original photo, Cara is in. And in the original photo, it looks like she is actually photoshopped into it because she kind of sticks out like a sore thumb. But either way, it was cold-blooded. Someone made the decision to airbrush Cara out, and I kind of support it.
I mean, the photo was better without her. She just wasn't making a great face. I mean, aside from anything else. But of course, there is obviously a conversation happening that you and I can't speak to at all online about Cara Delevingne's behaviour and how it's symptomatic of an overall kind of sexualization and fetishization of black women. So it might be worth Googling if you're interested in this kind of topic. And I've watched lots of TikToks of women and black women talking about this and saying that, like, it happens all the time. That apparently, you know, white women are kind of all over black women's, viewing them as sexual objects. It happens in nightclubs, apparently. Like, obviously, this is not something that I have experience of, but there does seem to be a conversation about this, which obviously has validity, that's kind of off the back of Cara Delevingne's antics.
Yeah, and what we can say is that she's been a bit of a Wally. And it's like, read the room, Cara. And it's like, yeah, don't be taken over. But what is lost in the whole thing is that Megan won top rap female artist.
Yes.
And Olivia Rodrigo won best female artist, which is a different thing. But there you go. So congratulations to Megan, if you're listening.
Wait, Megan won top female artist.
Top rap female artist.
Okay. And sorry, Olivia Rodrigo won
best female artist.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I won't go into the separation of those awards and why I feel like it's bad and why Megan should just win everything. Yeah. It's fine. Okay. Love Olivia too. No shade on Olivia. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on. We heard really sad news this week about our Britney.
Our Britney. And I think last time I was on, I was reading her joyous Instagram post about her pregnancy announcement. I'm not going to do that now. But last Saturday, she announced on Instagram that she had lost her third child. Mm. In a joint statement with her fiancé, Sam, she read, "It is with our deepest sadness we have to announce that we lost our miracle baby early in the pregnancy. This is a devastating time for any parent. Perhaps we should have waited to announce until we were further along. However, we were overly excited to share the good news. Mm. Our love for each other is our strength." And I think, you know, there is that, I don't know if it's the wisdom or the tradition or the, you know, it's the wisdom maybe that women choose to delay announcing the pregnancy until at least the first trimester, the first 12 weeks. But she was excited and, you know.
Yeah. And like, I really think that that's something that everyone needs to decide on their own. Mm-hmm. Because like, I think sometimes what that can lead to, or what that alludes to, is kind of that you, if you do lose a pregnancy, that you should keep that a secret, mm-hmm. or that you know, you won't want to share that with anyone, or that's something that you should keep to yourself, because, you know, obviously the consequence of telling people that you're pregnant, if you do lose that pregnancy, is that you have to tell people. And some people obviously won't want to have that conversation with people, but other people need support mm-hmm. in the context of a pregnancy loss and will want to have that conversation with family and friends. So like, I don't necessarily buy into the old, like, you know, you must wait until, you know, 13 weeks or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's a decision that everyone has to make. And obviously for Britney, you're talking about this on an absolutely enormous scale, because mm-hmm. everyone in the world knew she was pregnant.
Yeah. And I mean, we talked about it. Everyone was talking about it. And I mean, I suppose when you think about it, 12 weeks, it's a long time to keep something to yourself if you don't want to, or you need the help anyway. So she's back to her standard Britney posts again. And she is, you know, she acknowledged she's still dealing with it. She's very sad. She posted a Sex and the City meme featuring Carrie Bradshaw with eye makeup smeared, and said, I'm not in the mood to be with a bunch of people, and as you would expect. So, yeah. You know, I think they want to try. They want to, you know, get pregnant again. So hopefully it works out for our Brittany.
Yeah, everything crossed for Brittany. She just, all she deserves is happiness. Speaking of happiness, two people who are absolutely delighted with themselves, Kourtney Kardashian and Travis Barker, have wedded.
Yes, we watched
for real this time.
For reals this time. Yeah, we watched them a couple of weeks ago on the Kardashians get engaged on the beach in Montecito. Mm-hmm. And now they're officially married. I don't know if it was a bit of a, did it land in the hugest way that I might have expected it. It wasn't really, it's a bit of a damp squib.
I think that people think, and I think, that they think, that I think. No, but I'm assuming there's a bigger wedding coming.
Yeah.
And that this is just like the legal bit.
It's the Ritz cracker with the slice of cheese and a bit of hummus on it. It's just the taster. The meal will be coming later on. And I've heard, so you've seen on two different sources online, because I'm a serious investigative reporter, that it's either going to be in France or Italy. Yeah. She loves Italy. She loves traveling around Lake Como and stuff. So probably in Italy during the summer. Anyway, it's her first wedding, his third. Because when you know. He was married to Shayna Mochler from 2004 to 2008 and Melissa Kennedy 2001 to 2002. And I would just like to make a public service announcement. Meet the Barkers, in which Shayna and Travis.
Yes.
Relationship was documented for a time, is on YouTube.
Is it?
So yes, it's yes.
I must go back and rewatch.
And it does not have the production value of what we're used to. It was kind of early in the reality days, infancy. Mm. So it's literally just Shen is in bed. She's wrecked. She's pregnant. She's had a baby. She's having a baby. She's just had a baby. She's tired. She seems to be sleeping all the time. He's ultra motivated. He's like, Shen, get up. It's funny. So anyway, yeah, so that's my public service announcement. Watch Meet the Barkers on YouTube.
And myself and Emer McGlysett were discussing that in that series, there's a scene where Travis goes absolutely mental at Mindy Weiss.
Correct.
Event planner.
Yes.
Who then is planning the whole engagement thing in the current series of the Kardashians for himself and Kourtney. So he obviously made up with Mindy Weiss at some stage. Like, the only reason I know her name is because in that scene, he keeps referring to her by her full name, Mindy Weiss, the entire time. So
yeah, it's a circle of life. It's
I'm glad they've made peace.
They've made peace. Well, if you want to get with the Kardashian, you have to accept Mindy Weiss into your life. Yeah, and Jeff Latham. So they're the two.
Yeah, Jeff Latham, celebrity florist.
Yeah, celebrity florist.
Like, all of these people that just occupy space in my mind.
We know them all.
Like, do you ever think about what the other things that you could know about that maybe, I suppose, no, for our life, it probably is useful to have all these people in our brains.
Of course it is, yeah. And but what actually, if we're going to go that kind of strand, the fact that we know her grandmother, MJ.
Yeah.
And we love MJ. She was at the wedding as well, along with Travis's father. So they were pictured in the carousel of photos that was served to us on Instagram by Kourtney and Travis. So yeah, you can enjoy those. So yeah, looking forward to a bigger wedding this summer, and obviously hopefully we'll talk about that then.
Well, I do think, you know, Travis didn't fly for years and years anywhere because he was in that horrible plane crash where everyone died basically except for him. And since he got together with Kourtney, he's flying again. And so I think it would be kind of poignant or pungent, as we like to say in my house. It would be pungent to see them have a farting wedding.
A farting wedding where they all have to get on their private jets. Yeah. I'm happy for them.
Cardi B, she can't put a foot wrong as far as I'm concerned. And this week she did a little educational demonstration on her social media, didn't she, Esther?
She did. Now, Louise, you have long, stunning nails.
I do. Now, they've been longer.
Yeah.
They've been longer. That's but conservative I know for you. The long nail life.
Mm-hmm, you do. Show me, is the one of your thumb got a face in it?
It does.
Okay, great. Yeah. Now, I am not of the long nailed variety. I bite them. It's something I work on all the time. Cardi B does not have the same problem as me. She has long, extensive acrylics. They're very long. So MC Cash Doll asked Cardi B, "Hey Barty, how the hell do you change WAV diaper with the nails?" So she's like, "How do you practically get on with your lives?" Which is a question that, you know, when you see someone with really long nails, your Khloe Kardashians, etc., how do you live your life?
I've been asked many a time.
And what's your response?
You just adapt.
You just adapt.
You
because
do.
Because that is life. So Cardi, she could have let this go. She didn't. She's like, "I'm going to give you a full tutorial. Would Beyonce do this first?" She would not, I would say. I would hazard a guess. Cardi did a full nappy tutorial with a mocha coloured bear. From the removal of the soiled diaper to the cleaning of the fictitious tiny genitalia, re-napping and then dressing the child in their little trousers. At one point, culture's there. She's like, "What are you doing, mom?" words to that effect. She's like, it's a long story. But she kind of goes through the whole thing, and she did it with the greatest of ease. And yeah. So you just adapt.
But this is the thing you really do. Like, so many times people have been like, how do you wipe? Like, how do you put a tampon in? And it's like, you figure it out, bitch. You figure it out. If you want these long nails, you figure it out. Yeah. And honestly, now, if I ever have short nails, which has happened via nail accidents from time to time over the years, like, I've had long nails for about 10 years now. Mm-hmm. I find it hard to do things without my long nails. Mm. Like, my texting is all off because my fingers, my muscle memory is all based on the nails being there, you know?
And with the long nails, you get the chance, you can squeeze, you can flick things in a different way.
I will say there's some things that you can't do as well, like picking your nose, not as good with long nails.
I would have thought I would have got right in there.
No. And actually picking in general, it's actually very good if you're a picker because you can't.
Yeah.
Pick, because your natural nails are very thin.
Mm-hmm.
They can get right under anything. Do you know what I mean? But any kind of false nail, or even if you have, like, I have Builder in a Bottle, which is a gel overlay, it does thicken the nail a bit so that you can't pick as well. So in a way, they're medicinal. Anyway,
there's just
nail chat.
And if nail talk, if you want to see that tutorial, it's on the internet, so go and have a look. And Cardi has had long nails since she was 19, so she's well used to them. We celebrate
her. She knows what she's
doing. Celebrate her nails. Good for her.
And finally, let's give a little nod to our Nicola Coughlan, who is just going from strength to strength.
Yes. I mean, last night was the last episode of Dairy Girls, but she's like, I'm happy, part of this journey, but also I'm part of another journey. Maybe you would say maybe worldwide, a bigger journey.
Yeah.
Part of the Bridgerton family. She revealed on Instagram that her character, Penelope Featherington, will be the star of the storyline in the next series of Bridgerton. And so they're going to steer away from the path of the books. Basically her relationship with her long-term crush, Colin Bridgerton, played by Luke Newton, is going to come to the fore. So they're skipping one of the book series, and she's going to bring that main character energy to the series. She's going to step into the fore. She said, I can't believe it's out in the world. Bridgerton fans, I hope we do you proud. We're very nervous and excited. Can't wait for you to see Pollens. She's already shipped them story. So, yeah.
Like, talk about a star skyrocketing.
I know.
Like, it just feels like it's just one great thing after another for her at the moment. And I am happy for her, but I'm also really jealous.
Louise, look, I have had a podcast called The 80% where I was 80% happy for the success of my guests, and I'm 80% happy for her success. I wish her well, but sometimes you're like, oh, it just keeps going up and up and up for her.
Yeah.
I can't grow my nails, and she's
what would that be like
but you know,
for me it's mostly the clothes. She's wearing the most amazing clothes. She obviously is working, no, I'm not saying she can't pick good clothes herself, she can, but she's working with a stylist because I follow that stylist, and she's working with a great makeup artist, and her looks are just on point. And I want access to those beautiful clothes.
Louise, you have great clothes also, and you know, we're working towards that. Someday you're going to come in here in some huge Taffeta Simone Rocha creation of a Thursday, and we're going to celebrate and support you. So good for her. And when's it our turn?
Yes.
And now, well, let's just go. I don't know if you want to, I'm not going to produce your own segment, but if we want to just end on perhaps getting our own Bridgerton name.
Oh, yes, please. Yeah.
Now, obviously, we're going to cover ourselves for GDPR and security reasons, because if we're giving our first car, our first primary school teacher, and our best friend, so we're going to maybe just fudge things a little bit. So it's pick Lord or Lady.
I'll go Lady.
Okay, go for Lady. Add your middle name.
Christine.
Lady Christine. Add the last thing you drank with ton added to the end of it.
Lady Christine Fantaton.
Lady Christine Fantaton. Add of. And then add the first part of your street. Now, you might want to fudge this. With Shire at the end of it.
Lady Christine Fantaton of Knockshire.
Lady Christine Fantaton of Knockshire. Your Simone Rocha creation awaits you.
I love it. Tell me yours.
It would be Lady Martha Coffeyton of, we'll say, Grand Canal Shire. There we go.
Grand Canal Shire. It doesn't really roll off the tongue, but...
Look, Louise, that's my reality. That's my truth. If you can't have me by Grand Canal Shire, you can't.
I enjoy Coffeyton.
Coffeyton, thank
Coffeyton's
you.
Coffeyton's excellent.
I'm Coffeyton right now.
I would like you to write the Coffeyton series, please.
Maybe. We'll see.
Esther O'Moore, Donahue, where can people find you?
You can find me at Esther2Names on Instagram and at EstherOMD.com, because I'm obnoxious. There you go.
No, you're not. Thank you, Esther.
Thank you.
episode is brought to you by Now. So I absolutely love a limited series because I feel like you can really just like sink your teeth into them and it's not that intimidating. You know the way sometimes someone recommends something to you and you open it up and you're like, oh, six seasons, 155 episodes. It's just too much. A limited series, you know, you're talking about, you know, 4, 8, 10. It's a nice number. And you can kind of get stuck in over the course of a week or a few weeks and really absorb yourself in it. And that's what I like to do personally. I love when you're having a busy day and you know you've gotten the next episode of whatever brilliant thing you're watching, you know, is ready for you that night. And the latest one that I'm into is The Staircase, which was made by HBO, but is available here on Now. If you're already a fan of true crime, you're probably familiar with the documentary series, The Staircase. It's the same name. And the Staircase documentary series came out, well, it actually came out over the course of like, I think it was about 15 years because they made a documentary and then they had to follow up as things happened in the case. But it was really big a few years ago, so you might have seen it. But this is a drama series based on the same story. And what's interesting about this is that it actually includes the making of the documentary and also kind of asks the question of what role making a documentary like this plays in the way that things play out, and kind of asks the question of, you know, what role the kind of growth of true crime can have in the development of these actual cases and I suppose the course of justice. If you're thinking that sounds meta, it absolutely is. But it's also really the story of Michael Peterson and his family. They are the type of American family you often see in films. Everything's picture perfect. Dad is a successful crime novelist. They live in this enormous mansion in North Carolina. Everything is very wholesome. Their kids are good looking. Everything is just like peachy. And as I said, picture perfect until it all goes wrong. And Kathleen Peterson, the matriarch of the family, is found dead at the bottom of a staircase. And then as the police arrive and they start to do their investigation, the medical examiner finds 35 cuts and bruises that they deem are not consistent with the fall. And all of a sudden, the DA has Michael Peterson up for murder. And you can imagine what impact that has on the family. You know, do they believe the DA? Do they believe that their dad killed their mom? All these questions come up. The story takes like a million twists and turns that you just could never predict and gets into all of the nooks and crannies of family loyalty. And it also really asks the question of how well you know anyone, which I always find absolutely fascinating. Like the idea that even the people who you think you know the most, like you know everything that's going on, you know their lives inside out, that they may in fact have a lot of secrets. I find that just fascinating. It makes me think loads of really spooky thoughts. And like, I mean, let's be honest, chances are there's not much going on in the people in my lives, but you just, you know, you never know. And that's exactly what you kind of find yourself asking as you watch this. And one thing I will say is that I like a bit of true crime, but I'm not absolutely mad into it. And I really don't think you need to be to enjoy this because it is as much about family dynamics as anything else. And it's also just brilliantly performed. I mean, that's another thing about limited series these days. They tend to have absolutely incredible casts, and this is definitely one of those. Colin Firth plays Michael Peterson, the aforementioned father of the family, who obviously becomes the central character in this legal case. And that's kind of...
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
perfect because obviously the idea is that Michael Peterson had a lot of secrets, and Colin Firth seems like the perfect person to play that, because, you know, you look at Colin Firth and you just trust him and you love him and you don't question anything. And then Toni Collette plays the complex Kathleen Peterson, and like, Toni Collette, as far as I'm concerned, just doesn't know how to not be great. She's absolutely spectacular in this. And then there's Sophie Turner, who we know as like all-around cool girl, brilliant actress. She was obviously in Game of Thrones. She's married to Joe Jonah. She's pregnant and absolutely stunning at the moment. And then, oh, Parker Posey has the most outstanding Southern drawl in this. And to be honest, I would watch Parker Posey do literally anything. So the first four episodes of The Staircase are available right now with a Now Entertainment membership, and the remaining episodes will be streaming weekly. So you can give yourself a nice healthy dose of four episodes to get yourself into it and then trickle out your pleasure over the next number of weeks. So get into it. Well, that is just about time on the podcast this week. But before I go, there's a couple of things that need to be dealt with. And that first thing is to acknowledge all of you who got in touch this week to tell me that the non-animal milks, plant milks, your oat milk, your almond milk, all those milks, that they are in fact more expensive and that coffee shops are charging you more for your coffees. I'm sorry, guys. We didn't know. And in fairness, we did say at the time, myself and Emer, we can't say this with confidence. I suppose maybe I was a little bit confident, but apologies for misrepresenting the situation here. I hear you. I have fully felt your frustration on this matter. And we can but hope that people are listening who can do something about this wretched scenario where you're being, I mean, in fairness, it's, some people were saying it can be up to 50 cents. That seems like a very steep per coffee markup. Anyway, I hear you. And don't forget, you can always get in contact with me if you have a correction, a concern, a comment. You let me know. You can message me. I'm at Louise McSharry on all the social media platforms. Now, also another piece of information in relation to last week's podcast. At the end of last week, I said I recommended the film The Worst Person in the World, which I absolutely loved and cannot recommend enough. I didn't have a streaming platform for you at the time, but it is now on Mubi, M-U-B-I, which is like a film, I think it's mostly independent film streaming platform. So if you want to watch it legally, which is what you should do, you can do that in that way now. In terms of recommendations this week, I was super, super busy, spent a lot of time in the car. So I wasn't doing a lot of reading, although actually I was doing some reading because I did an event with Louise O'Neill and Cecilia Hearn at the International Festival of Literature in Dublin. I actually did it this evening. It's Thursday, it's very late. I usually do this much earlier in the day. But this Thursday evening, I did an event with them. So I was reading Cecilia Hearn's book, Freckles, which I really enjoyed actually over the last week or so. Something that I haven't watched, but that I am going to watch this week, is new to Disney Plus. It's Life and Beth. It is the new series from Amy Schumer. And I feel like Amy Schumer has become a bit of a kind of Marmite figure. People kind of aren't so sure what they think about her. Some people love her, but then it seems like there's a lot of people who really hate her as well. But the reviews of this program are excellent. Amy Schumer is apparently brilliant in it. The writing is apparently fantastic. And I'm really looking forward to trying to find some time to get stuck into it this week. I've been hoping to watch it since I heard about it, you know, airing in America, but all 10 episodes are now available on Disney Plus. This is not a paid ad. I just am very excited about watching it. And if you watch it this week, then sure, we can talk about it next week. But yeah, that's about it. I'm going to head off now. I hope you have a really lovely week. If not, I hope you can find some pockets of relief within whatever challenges you're experiencing at the moment. I have to say, I have been finding things a little bit difficult recently over the last couple of months. And that, you know, that's life. It isn't always sunshine and lollipops. Sometimes you're really busy and you feel like you can't take a breath. Sometimes you get a bit of bad news. Sometimes your hormones are just fucking with you. Yes, I said fuck. So whatever challenges you're facing, I hope that you can try and find a little bit of space to take care of yourself within those challenges over the course of this week. And I will talk to you again next Friday. Have a great one.